Hey everybody, my name is Sarah Kreger. I'm an emergency physician and intensivist at UCLA, and this is the ICU EDU podcast. So today we are going to do installment number one of a new short series called Blood Gas Reading Skills. So this is going to be ABG number one of our Blood Gas Reading Skills series, because it's been pointed out to me that probably a lot of the reason that we often don't get that good at reading ABGs outside of the ICU is because we just don't do it that often, right? So for example, in the emergency department, we get handed an EKG every 5 minutes, right? It feels like certainly every 5 minutes, somebody hands us an EKG and we need to sign off STEMI, no STEMI, and so forth. But we don't get handed an ABG every 5 minutes in the ED. But in the ICU, we kind of do. You know, I think that with about the same frequency as EKGs in the ED, maybe not quite the same, but close, you just get handed one ABG after another and you learn to read them. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I think the thing is that just as you've gotten so good at reading EKGs now, that it really feels like you're reading a story about your patient when you're looking at that EKG, you can do the same thing with ABGs. Like, most people hate reading ABGs because they have to go through this whole, okay, step one, acidemia, alkalemia, step two, and it's sort of a nightmare and it's not intuitive, it's not organic. But once you get good at them, it really feels more like you're reading a story about your patient. You just need to learn how to read, basically. So that's what we're going to practice. And so we're starting with ABG number one. And this ABG is, the pH is 7.18, the CO2 is 43, the O2 is 64, the bicarb is 16, and the patient has an anion gap of 25. So how do we look at this ABG? Well, the way I was taught, and I think we were all taught to read ABGs, was step one, acidemia, alkalemia. Well, sure, that's really easy for all of us. This patient, the pH is 7.18, so they're acidemic. They are in a state of acidemia. I think the problem comes with what we were taught is the next step. We were taught that because we report ABGs with the CO2 as the next number, we should look at that next. But I actually don't find that the most helpful thing to do, because in order to know what that CO2 means, in order to interpret that CO2 in context, I actually have to look at the bicarb next. So let's look at the bicarb next. So our pH is 7.18. We're acidemic, right? Now we got to figure out why. What different processes are going on that have resulted in that acidemic pH? So I'm going to skip to the bicarb next. So the bicarb is 16. So that is telling us we have a metabolic acidosis. And the anion gap is telling us we have an anion gap metabolic acidosis. Now, the reason that I go to the bicarb next is because the bicarb tells me what the context is for the CO2. Because the CO2 may be normal or not, depending on what it's supposed to be. So, for example, we have a metabolic acidosis, right? Now, what the body is supposed to do is compensate for it, right? So if you have a metabolic acidosis, you're supposed to start breathing faster, bigger tidal volumes to blow off that CO2 to compensate. And looking at the CO2 in this context, knowing that because my bicarb is low, because I have a metabolic acidosis, my CO2 should also be low to compensate, it's not. My CO2 in this case is 43. And so while 43 is technically within normal limits, it's higher in this case than it should be. Because my CO2 should be a lot lower than that, because this patient should be compensating for their metabolic acidosis, but they're not. So what is actually happening here? Well, yes, they have a metabolic acidosis, but they also have a respiratory acidosis. Why? Because the CO2 is a lot higher than it should be. Now, what's the rule for deciding how low or high the CO2 should be in the context of a metabolic acidosis? Well, you can do Winter's formula, but don't bother, because I just hate doing math at 2 a.m. because I'm going to screw it up. So the no math way of doing this is, in the context of an acute metabolic acidosis, your patient is appropriately compensated from a respiratory standpoint if the CO2 is equal to the last two digits of the pH. So, for example, if you had a patient who had a bicarb of, let's say, 16, like this patient, but they were appropriately compensated, what you should see is that their pH should be more like, let's say, 7.25 with a CO2 of 25. And in that appropriate compensation, the CO2 should be about equal to the last two digits of the pH. But in this case, that's not true. We have a metabolic acidosis. Our bicarb is 16, but our pH is 7.18 and our CO2 is 43. So we have an acute metabolic acidosis as well as an acute respiratory acidosis. That is what this ABG is telling me. Now, what this means about my patient depends on context. Because I think the other thing that always bothered me about the way that I was taught ABGs is that you'll be given an ABG and be told to interpret it, and a single ABG, the exact same numbers, can tell you a very different story depending on the clinical context. So, let's think about what kind of clinical context and what this ABG is telling us in each one. So, for example, what if I am told that this ABG is in a 78-year-old female with COPD and hypotension and a fever? Okay, well, I now have 78-year-old female, COPD, hypotension, fever. I have an anion gap acidosis. So, you know, I got hypotension and fever. I'm thinking, maybe is this patient septic? Let's just say. So maybe I have an acute metabolic acidosis due to a lactic acidosis in the context of septic shock. And then, you know, the COPD patient, she probably, because of her baseline COPD, cannot breathe her CO2 down to appropriate compensation because she has COPD. So maybe she runs a little high at baseline, or maybe just when stressed, when she needs to try and blow her CO2 down to a lower number, she can't do it. And so the primary problem in that patient, our 78-year-old female, history of COPD, comes in septic shock. Really, the metabolic acidosis is our primary problem. And the CO2 being higher than it should be, failing to compensate for that metabolic acidosis, is just telling us that this lady has baseline COPD and she's not able to compensate. But really, our primary problem is our metabolic acidosis. What if instead, this was a 21-year-old male with a history of severe asthma, coming in hypertensive and wheezing, getting multiple rounds of nebs, getting epi, getting everything, and just can't breathe. Breathing at a rate of 40 and just can't move air, has been in the ED for a while, looks awful. What does this ABG tell us about this patient? Well, we still have our same ABG, pH of 7.18, CO2 of 43, O2 of 64, and a bicarb of 16. But in this patient, this tells me a different story because this patient is breathing at a rate of 40. If you're breathing at a rate of 40, what should your CO2 be? It should be very low, right? If I started breathing at 40 right now, my CO2 would probably go down to what? 15 maybe? And so if somebody is breathing that fast with a normal quote-unquote CO2, that's not normal. His CO2 should be much lower than 43. So that freaks me out. That's really scary because he's breathing that fast, but he's not blowing off his CO2. I'm worried he's not moving air. Maybe he's getting tired. Now, what is that bicarb of 16? What is that anion gap acidosis with the bicarb of 16 and the gap of 25? Tell me in this patient, in our 21-year-old with severe asthma who's gotten all the treatments. Well, it tells me something very different in this patient, but it makes me very worried. So in this patient, I'm attributing the lactic acidosis, so let's just say it's a lactic acidosis, to multiple factors. One, he's gotten a lot of albuterol at this point. He's probably gotten, you know, continuous nebs, multiple hours. He's also getting epi. Those two things, albuterol and epi, can cause activation of the sort of stress lactic acidosis pathway and can cause an elevation in your lactate. Because we'll talk about lactate during another post, but lactate is not only elevated when somebody is hypoperfusing. It can get activated due to stress as well. And so giving somebody exogenous beta agonists, whether it's epi or albuterol, if you give enough of them, it can cause your lactate to rise. So that's probably part of it. Another part of it is that this patient's endogenous catecholamines are going berserk, right? He can't breathe, he's 21, and he has a robust endogenous catecholamine response. And so that intense physiologic stress that he's under, just that physiologic stress, can also cause his lactate to go up. Finally, the diaphragm is actually quite a big muscle. And this kid, this 21-year-old, has been running a marathon with his diaphragm for who knows how many hours. And that also, just like you'll get it in a marathoner, can cause some lactic acidosis. So between all of those things, I'm worried about this because even though my respiratory problem is primary here, like what's underlying causing all this? Well, the fact that he is having severe asthma exacerbation and he's breathing at 40, but his asthma is so bad, even though he's breathing at 40, his CO2 is still 40 because he just has such bad asthma, obstructive disease, he can't breathe that CO2 off. And this lactic acidosis, this anion gap acidosis in this patient, that's a secondary problem. That is caused by the physiologic stress related to the fact that he can't breathe, running a marathon with his diaphragm, and then all the medications we've given him because he can't breathe. So in that patient, my primary issue here is actually the respiratory acidosis. What about a third patient? What if we have a totally different clinical situation? What if now I have a 46-year-old male and they are a critical trauma and they came in as an MVC and they don't look good. Their GCS isn't great. Their GCS is 7 and they have a positive fast and they're hypotensive and they look awful. And I get this gas. The patient's not intubated yet. They're just coming in from the field. So now in my 46-year-old critical polytrauma with a bad GCS and with a positive fast, who's not looking good, but not yet intubated, I get this ABG again. 7.18 with a CO2 of 43, a O2 of 64, a bicarb of 16, and an anion gap of 25. Now in this patient, I actually think I have two primary problems here because his lactic acidosis, let's say, that's probably due to hemorrhagic shock, hypoperfusion. There may be some degree of stress response here for sure, but probably a lot of this is due to he's just hypoperfusing because he's in profound shock, probably because he's bleeding, hemorrhagic shock from his trauma. So that's probably what's causing that. Now, why is this patient not compensating? That is a really good question because he should be, right? I mean, it's possible he has a tension pneumothorax and his lungs aren't working, but say you listen to his lungs and actually chest x-ray looks okay. EFAST is okay in terms of his lungs. Like you see some blood in his belly, but lungs sliding both sides. So his lungs seem okay, but you look at him and his GCS is awful and he's just not breathing that fast. I'm now worried that this guy has a severe neuro injury and he is not compensating because, right, he has a metabolic acidosis. If he was awake and alert with normal lungs and freaking out as trauma patients usually are, he should be compensating. You know, if anything, often they will have a lower than expected CO2 because they're in pain and they're anxious. So they'll actually have a primary respiratory alkalosis above and beyond just compensating for their metabolic acidosis. But this guy, not only does he not have an alkalosis from his respiratory standpoint, he actually has a respiratory acidosis. He's not compensating, and that makes me worried about, does he have some kind of devastating neuro injury or a head bleed or something else that's causing a decreased respiratory drive? And so that is what this EKG makes me concerned about in that last patient, my 46-year-old critical trauma. So as you can see, this ABG gives us a ton of information, but it depends on clinical context. The key thing to realize about our ABG is that we have two different disorders. We have an anion gap metabolic acidosis with our bicarb of 16, anion gap of 25. Then our CO2 of 43 is not normal in the context of our anion gap acidosis, metabolic acidosis. It's actually high. It's higher than it should be. Now, how you put all that information together, and most importantly, clinically, what you believe is the patient's primary problem as opposed to secondary problem really depends on the clinical context. So, taking this ABG, reading it like a book to tell you a lot about your patient in the clinical context, that is what we all need to learn. So that is ABG number one in our blood gas skills reading series. Stay tuned for ABG's number next. And by the way, if you have interesting ABGs, you can go to the website icuedu.org. And if you want to submit them through the comments section, I will try and take a look at them and maybe discuss some of them under our blood gas reading skills. Thanks you guys for listening.